gentlemen, welcome to the only comic book show you're ever going to need to listen to. Beyond the panel here on UMFM 101.5, my name's Brian. I am the host with the most, but I promise if you ask for my name three times, you're only going to be met with disappointment. I'm joined, as always, by the ever-exuberant Curtis Mensforth.
Well, thank you for that introduction. I'm happy to be here, as usual.
And Braden Hafichuk?
Hafichuk.
There we go. I got it right, Haffy. Sort of. How are you guys, how are you gentlemans doing today?
Wonderful.
I'm doing pretty good. Tired after a long haul at the Comic-Con.
Yeah, so that's going to be our major topic of the day. Of course, we're talking about C4. I was not able to attend. I wish I would have been able to, but these two clowns, these junkies, these comic book fiends were very much able to attend. Braden, of course, worked, and Curtis went in all of his glory and attended. They got to meet some cool people. We might have some cool news too. I don't want to be that guy, but we might have some really cool stuff to announce in the near future based on these two's exploits at the con. But so we're gonna run through these guys' experience, and if we have time at the end, we're gonna talk about the new Marvel movie Thor.
Thor Ragnarok.
So first of all, you guys both went to C4. How many years have you guys been to like Comic-Con?
Well, I've been going straight at least for the last 7 years.
Okay.
Like, I've been going to C4, also known as the Central Canada Comic-Con.
Right.
Yeah. Ever since, like, before it was even at the convention center. My first year going to it, it was at the Victoria Hotel, close to the airport.
Okay.
And it was a lot smaller back then.
Oh, and like,
it's really taken off.
It really has. But like, the thing is, the year that I went there, that was kind of like its last year in the Victoria Hotel, because it had gotten big, and there was like maybe 3 feet of walking room between booths. Yeah, like it was.
That sounds insane.
Yeah, so pretty happy that it's at the convention center now, especially with that new expansion to it. So much more space for creators, so much more space for shops and everything, and guests. It's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I haven't been going as long as you have, Braden. I mean, obviously, lifelong comic fan. It's just growing up, I never had anyone really who was super into comics to go with. So, you know, when you're 12 years old, you kind of have to rely on other people to, like, take you and that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, for me, like, I've been going, like, the last 3-4 years now. So,
okay.
I mean, not super long, but it's always been an enjoyable time for me. I always have a lot of fun.
Forgetting that you're, like, 5 years younger than me.
Yeah, I'm only in my fourth year out of school, so I'm only 21, so I haven't lived as much as you have.
He's a widow boy.
Stop it. You're making me feel old. Get off my lawn. yeah, so, like, obviously you guys have experienced a whole bunch of Comic-Cons then,
yeah,
between the two of you. I've been to a number of Comic-Cons. Unfortunately, wasn't able to go to this one. So tell me, like, in regards to, like, how does this rate in comparison, like, the guests, the cosplay, the boots, the stuff that you found?
Yeah.
How does it rate in comparison to the other Comic-Cons you've been to? Like, higher or, like, was it above average or below average in comparison to the other ones?
I'd say, and I'm being completely objective here, because, like, I was excited
subjective
so much for this. Like, I got to meet so many of my favorite creators and that, who are coming in from out of town. Like, they weren't the big-name guests and that, but it was just so, I've been, like, fans of them since I was a little kid, so it was really nice just to meet them and just hear their stories and that.
Yeah.
But, for the con overall, and I only got an hour or so of actually walking it, the rest of it was hawking pops to wonderful fans walking by.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd say it was about an average one.
Okay.
Like, there was no, like, pinnacle guest this year like there were in previous years, like William Shatner or Patrick Stewart.
Jay Baruchel's pretty cool, though.
Jay Baruchel is very cool. I'd say he was the premier guest.
Right. I mean, he was the one that they advertised the most.
Yeah, I'd say. Either him or John Rhys-Davies. But John Rhys-Davies has been here a couple of years in that.
Right.
But he's, like, him and Jay Baruchel are definitely, like,
oh, yeah,
the A-lists coming in.
Steve Bloom obviously would have been really cool.
Yeah, he was there. Yeah.
I mean, obviously not for people who are just a fan of, like, the written on and drawn on page comics, it's not as cool. But, like, for those of us who like to expand into different, he is obviously the voice of Wolverine. He is, for anime fans, he's the voice of Spike Spiegel.
Yeah,
the
Cowboy Bebop.
The English voice of Spike Spiegel. He's the character, like, the main, the protagonist in Bulletstorm.
Yeah. Is he also Master Chief?
I want to say yes. He basically, if you hear a gravelly voice in comics,
he has a really distinct voice.
It's distinct, but yeah. If you hear a gravelly voice in comics, odds are it's Steve Bloom. Mm-hmm. The guy's incredible, I think. Who else was there? Denise Crosby, Jim Beaver, Mark McClure, Paul Amos, Renee O'Connor, Allison Mack.
Oh, so yeah, Smallville. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Ken Shamrock was there.
Yeah.
Ken Shamrock, the professional wrestler, former MMA guy, he was there. Yeah, so, and John Rhys-Davies, obviously, from Indiana Jones, Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's been here a few times. It still would have been really cool to see him, though.
Yeah, and, like, the after party after the Saturday con, there's the after party going on at the Radisson Hotel downtown. And John Rhys-Davies was there as, like, a friendly event and that for about an hour or
just
so.
Just, like, hanging out.
I think you could, like, either get, like, signatures or pictures of them, but it's just, like, a much more casual setting than it was at the con. So I wasn't able to go to it, but, like, I would have been excited to go and just check that out. Just
for the record, Steve Bloom in Halo, not Master Chief.
Not Master Chief.
Does a whole bunch of additional voices, so that's probably what you heard him from. Plays Darkstar in No More Heroes, the video game, if you ever got to play that. He's in Ben 10. He plays.
He was
Rhino in the Spider-Man 3 video game.
Yes.
God forbid you ever played that.
Ooh, I did.
He's Gene in the Metal Gear series. I'm just going through.
He has quite the portfolio.
IMDb is like a million miles long. He's in Guild Wars. He's Mugen in Samurai Champloo.
Yeah.
He's Jamie in Mega's XLR.
Oh, yes, I remember that series.
Yeah,
I haven't thought about that one in ages.
You guys should go talk to Tiago from TV Talkers. That's like one of his favorite shows at the moment.
Oh, man.
It's so good.
That.
Don't even talk smack about it. I wish it had been longer. I remember watching that as a kid. Mega's XLR is amazing. Back to the topic at hand, though. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the guests were pretty cool. Did you guys meet anybody outside of like the build guests that were really enriching, awesome experiences for you guys?
Ooh, other than the build guests, I got to touch base with a lot of my independent comic friends who are set up in Artist Alley.
Okay.
Specific shout out to Andrew Lawrence of September 17th Productions. He runs his own comic book company. It's awesome. They've got about five titles out at the moment, each of them in various stages of issues, but they're all really good. It's all entertaining. It's a really tight-knit world, and it was just nice to just touch base with them and see how everything's going. So
nice.
Pretty solid.
What would you recommend of his stuff off of September 17th?
September 17th?
Yeah. What would you recommend? Like, if I were to be like, yo, I want to read one thing to get, like, the breach or, like, to get the idea of this guy's talent, what am I reading?
That's kind of the thing. It's like his company really has something for everybody.
Okay.
He's got several team books out, but he's got some solo books. The main book of the company is called Legacy.
Okay.
And it's a solo hero book, but it's the book that everything else revolves around.
Is Legacy the name of the hero?
Legacy is the name of the city.
Okay.
The hero's name, I believe, is Paragon.
Okay. And yeah. So, like, tell me about that.
It's standard setting, like standard superhero setting, and it starts off kind of like your basic superhero story.
Okay.
But after reading the first issue and keep going, you realize that the story isn't really about the main hero. Like, it just shows in the title. It's like it's all about the city.
Okay.
That the hero resides in. He's the principal actor of the story, but the story isn't necessarily about him. It's the development, and you also see the city like breaking off into other segments and stories in other books.
That's so cool.
It's just this really tightly knit world
that's awesome.
Everything works. And he just launched his new book, Sentries. It's being billed as like the Avengers. It's like the Avengers movie in like paper form. And I know there might be an Avengers comic, but this one has a real like cinematic feel to it. Hmm.
Okay. All right. I'll definitely be checking that out. Curtis, did you meet anybody?
Yeah. So for myself, basically, Comic-Con was a lot of fun. Since I wasn't working, I was able to walk around and experience and take it all in, for better or for worse. I think the coolest thing about Comic-Con is definitely talking to artists and looking at all these awesome, all these awesome things that they have been working on and kind of seeing what they're up to. I got the really neat chance of meeting Jason Fabok getting some comics signed by him. And for anyone who is like, that name sounds familiar, most recently he collaborated with Tom King on a four-part storyline called The Button, which is basically just tying into the Watchmen and whole mystery.
It goes across the main Batman book and the main Flash
book. Batman 2122, Flash 2122. Right. He did the cover art on all four issues and the interior art on the Batman issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my issues signed by him for that. Other stuff that he's done is he's worked with Geoff Johns, which is really awesome. Mm-hmm. Definitely got his name out there. He worked on Justice League, Detective Comics. He's done Suicide Squad. So he's definitely a well-known guy in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool meeting him. Leonard Kirk was there too.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of cool stuff with Marvel. He's with Chapter House too. So meeting him was pretty awesome as well. Besides that, I was more interested in the comics than like meeting like actors or things like that. Not to say that that isn't cool, but for me, Comic-Con is always the emphasis is on the comics. I was like looking at kind of what comics are there, what people involved in comics are there. So for me, some of those names that I mentioned were kind of the highlight of my experience.
So then under that umbrella, right, looking for comics, you know, the comics are the emphasis. Did either of you see anything, any issues, any collected editions that like really stood out to you as like, whoa, like I've never seen this in person before?
There was a lot of cool stuff. Like they have a ton of different areas in the convention center. There's like a whole area with like Golden Age and Silver Age comics. So stuff that's like from the 50s, like really rare, kind of hard to find stuff. That was really cool.
Was it like really expensive?
Yeah. depending on the issue, I mean,
what is the most expensive single issue that you saw?
Oh, I don't even. Man, that's a tough one. There is some really old
action
comics.
You don't have to tell me. Like, you don't have to say what the exact issue was, but like, do you remember the price? One that was just like, holy cow, this is like insane.
Oh, I've seen one. I've seen a few for like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing in like the tens of thousands. Like that wouldn't just be out in the open at a Comic Con for people to buy so easily.
No, that's usually under lock and key.
But yeah, they definitely have ones that are like several hundreds of dollars. Things that are like, you know, old 1950s action comics.
That must
like
be
that.
So stressful for the seller to like have to like watch over that all the time.
Is that guy gonna steal? No.
They have a few people who are like watching you, and yeah, they're security teams too. Like, because I'm sure people have tried stealing things at Comic-Con.
Yeah, I saw the police actually walk by a couple times. So I'm thinking maybe somebody tried to pull it off, but it looks like they didn't succeed. So
no, I think that's just like it's a requirement if you have a gathering of a certain number of people.
Yeah.
I think the cops just have to be there. That's why like the cops are at like sports events, right?
Yeah, that makes
right.
a lot of sense.
And
just,
concerts, I think they just have, like, if there's a gathering of a certain number of people, like, they just have to be there for whatever civil
there's
safety
a lot of,
concerns.
Like, rare collectibles, too, though, like, besides just, like, comics, like, statues, you know, things that are, like, you know, $700, you know, figurines of certain characters, things like that.
Blows
I definitely
my mind.
Don't that. I do not have that kind of money, so I was only there to look at those, not buy those. I did buy some things, but nothing that expensive.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, so I'm assuming that both of you managed to purchase some things while you were at Comic-Con. What was your favorite thing to purchase?
Okay. Brayden.
Well, it's kind of tough for me because it's like, it's kind of cheating because I got a big stack of stuff from Galaxy after the fact, just like with the deals and everything going on.
They
I
had
mean,
some
like, you
killer
still,
deals.
You
yeah.
still bought it though, right? So like it was still something you got at Comic-Con,
yeah.
right? So...
Well, it's actually like this kind of two things that I'm really proud of, or not proud of, but I was really excited to get. One is this collection of like single volumes and that of like old Dark Horse Star Wars comics.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, like, I love the Extended Universe stuff.
Extended Universe. And this was like the stuff I was purchasing was near the end of the Dark Horse era.
So like Kate Skywalker type stuff?
Not legacy stuff. The stuff I was purchasing was Knight Errant.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That one is set 1,000 years before the movies.
Right.
I love that era of Star Wars. It was so interesting.
Oh yeah, like when you had the new Sith Wars.
Yeah,
and
that
everything.
Particular era.
Exar Kun and stuff.
Fascinating.
Like that.
Ulik Keldrama.
Yep.
Yeah. So I got Knight Errant. Haven't opened that up yet, but the art looks pretty top-notch in it. I'm kind of excited.
It's always been really good. I was having this conversation with a couple of friends of mine who were blown away at like how big Dark Horse got, considering that it was like founded by a like a dude in Oregon who just owned a comic store, right?
Yeah, his store was Dark. His store was Dark Horse Comics, and he's like, "Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna start making my own comics."
And it got to the point where, like, for a while in the '90s, every single company that wanted like a third, like a comic done for their television show or their movie, went through Dark Horse, and like Star Wars comics were done through Dark Horse forever and ever and ever and ever.
They were with Marvel for quite some time.
They started off with Marvel, and then I think the initial license wore out, and then they went to Dark Horse. But now the fact that like Disney owns it, they've kind of gathered all their properties together.
Yeah, now Marvel is publishing Star Wars.
So the new Star Wars.
Well, that and the extended universe technically isn't canon anymore.
Oh, that was heartbreaking. But
it doesn't stop the stories from being there, right? Which is still cool.
It doesn't stop it, but it's the sad fact that there's no more being added to that universe.
But like. Okay, but here's my hot take. They had done pretty much everything that they could have done, right? Mm-hmm. They explored so much of everything before the Knights of the Old Republic stuff, and then they explored so much of everything that was post to, like, how much further can you go in any direction, right?
Well, it's like they were actually starting to build stuff. After, like, Legacy concluded, Cade Skywalker...
Right.
Well, spoilers, but the series has been out for a long time. Cade Skywalker defeated Darth Krayt, finally.
Right.
And balance was brought to the Force. The Sith Empire was defeated in that.
God bless the Skywalkers.
God bless the Skywalkers. They're always there to save the bacon. And, like, the Empire, the Republic, and the Jedi were finally, like, at peace with each other.
Right.
So it's like, okay, that's, like, a natural conclusion. But then they start making more... They started another series right after that where it's actually, like, Leia's descendant. And she's, like, having to, like, piece everything together, and there's a new mystery. But that's when...
Spooky.
Yeah, but that's when the axe got brought down. So it's like... The whole extended universe ended on that. Oh, there's a new threat on the horizon. So,
yeah, I mean, like, the thing with Star Wars is you can kind of always do that, but at the same time, like, you shouldn't necessarily, like, need to, if that makes sense.
Like, if they left it with the Legacy ending, where it's just like the three parties that have constantly been at each other's necks since 1977, if they finally said, okay, you know what, we're at peace with each other, this is solid.
All right, that's fair.
Yeah.
So. Curtis, what did you pick up back to Comic-Con? What did you pick up that you really liked?
So, for myself, something that you definitely would really like is I got a really cool Blue Beetle.
Teddy!
Figure.
Nice.
Yeah, normally quite expensive under normal circumstances.
That figure, I think, is like normally $40, isn't it?
Yeah, ooh. Yeah. It's a really nice Blue Beetle figure.
What series is this?
From the Justice League International DC line. They had a bunch of figures there.
Including Booster. With its goofy
collar. They had all kinds of figures, but I went with Blue Beetle because I really like Blue Beetle.
Teddy.
And I know you really like Blue Beetle, so that was something that was a really nice find for me. I also managed to complete my Jeff Lemire Animal Man run. Picked up some good... Believe it or not, yeah, a lot of people don't know Jeff Lemire had a run on Animal Man with DC, but that was really cool.
Nice.
Was that New 52?
Yeah, that was during the New 52 era. Kind of one of those lesser-known titles that was actually a really, really popular... by readers, just commercially not as successful as...
I felt like, you know, it should have been as commercially successful because of how well done it was. I felt like it should have been as commercially successful as, like, Swamp Thing, but like it wasn't.
Swamp Thing was written by Scott Snyder, so that's another big name talent behind a lesser-known character.
He wasn't big at the time, though, right?
True. I mean, he was writing Batman at the same time, but that was also before Batman... really took off, I guess, with the whole Court of Owls.
Because
he was writing that at the same time.
Right, exactly. And so, like, Swamp Thing, the first 12 issues of Swamp Thing were just as big as, like, those Batman issues before anybody had, like, any idea who the heck Scott Snyder was.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Because it's, like, the reason that the early issues from Scott Snyder's Batman run are so expensive, it's not because... Oh, it's the beginning of Scott Snyder's run, because there's actually a previous series that he did on Batman that everybody
wants.
Yeah,
the Black Mirror.
The Black Mirror.
That was really good.
The reason that, like, Batman issue 1 and 2 are so expensive is because, like you said, it wasn't that huge of a series. Nobody really knew a lot about Scott Snyder. Batman was kind of it was one of their A-list series, but it wasn't a lot. So they really didn't print a lot of that first issue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and not only that, but like at the time, people didn't buy it in droves because it didn't show like any previous like villain or anything, right? Like it was just like all of a sudden it was a mystery and nobody knew because he walked into the he talked to Gordon. He walked into the apartment or whatever where the bum was supposed to be, and he was just like strung up, and it was like the Court of the Owls is watching you or whatever, painted in blood on the walls.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like everyone's like, oh, great, here we go again. Another really bad Batman storyline that's eventually going to end up in the Penguin or the Joker or whatever. And it turned out to be at least my favorite Batman storyline of all time.
It's a modern classic.
So good. Yeah, so Scott Snyder's really good. But that Lemire's Animal Man run should have been as big as Scott Snyder's Swamp Thing run.
Yeah, Lemire in general is just always very solid, and pretty much anything I've read by him I've always liked. So his Animal Man run was cool. I got some really wacky Plastic Man issues at Comic-Con.
Because
I'm a big Plastic Man guy, so, nice. You know, gotta find some cool Plastic Man issues. So overall, it was a pretty good haul. I definitely enjoyed myself there. A lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that for both of you guys. One, like, you guys mentioned that, you know, comics is obviously the biggest thing for you guys. And so you try to focus on that. But, you know, it's not... Comic-Con is a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
It can be for everyone. It's not always about comics.
And so what were some of the other things that you guys noticed that might have been of interest to somebody else? You know, something that caught your interest was like, okay, that's, you know, that's not my thing, but like that is a really cool thing that's going on that I, you know, somebody would want to take part in or like or see or talk to or do. So like hit me up with that. Like what cool things did you see that weren't in your wheelhouse?
For me, this is probably the biggest answer, but the cosplays.
Hey, that's a huge thing. People love cosplays.
It's amazing. And it's like, I was only able to walk around the convention for that hour. But just at my corner, where I was at like the intersection of a whole bunch of different booths. And so many different people in amazing costumes. Like every 5 minutes, I was stopping them like, hey, would I just be able to take a picture of the costume? And all of them are just super gracious about it. They're like, yeah, no problem. But
I mean, that's what they do it for, right? Like they do it because like, they obviously enjoy doing it, and they enjoy enriching people's lives that way.
People put a lot of time, effort, and money
towards
expensive to. It's not cheap to come up with a good costume.
It shows, like, some of the most stunning costumes were from, like, Overwatch, where it's just, like, they were doing the whole costumes. That one of them was, like, the Angel character.
Mercy,
yeah, and she had, like, the full wings and everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of video game cosplays, anime, just things that are not even comic-related.
Street Fighter
like
is a really big one. You see a lot of Chun-Li and Cammy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Bison is another one you see a lot of. I feel like there's a lot of, like, Mortal Kombat cosplays.
Oh, yeah.
A decent amount of, like, Super Smash Brothers stuff.
There's things from all over the place.
I wouldn't be surprised if Samus Aran, there was a couple. So, like, what... Did you get to see a lot of cosplays too?
I did, yeah. I saw one that was really, really impressed me, but also looked to be extremely cumbersome, was like an 8-foot tall Hulkbuster cosplay.
Right, so like Tony
Very
Stark's
accurate.
Iron Man, Hulkbuster.
Yeah, I mean, it was impressive.
It like plastic, metal? Like what?
Did
what,
you see that one, Brayden?
Only in the distance. Like I could see him, like me and the other coworkers just like, what the heck is that? And we just realized like this big lumbering monster across the booth. That's a cosplay.
It was probably some kind of like carbon fiber, so something that would have the appearance, I guess, of the
but
of
be
kind
light,
of metal, but super lightweight. So maybe it wasn't as heavy as it looked. It just looked really, really cumbersome to move around in.
Mm-hmm. Was the person walking on stilts? I'm assuming
they would have had to have been. Yeah. But it was really impressive.
Was the coloring on point too?
Yeah, it was really good. Really, really, really well done. I have no idea how much it costs to get all those materials, but
an insane amount of money.
And they had the lights and everything all over it.
No,
so it was. They went all out.
This person might have been one of the top five that I saw. I mean, I'm sure there were other ones that I didn't even see Friday and Sunday, but
what else was in your top five?
Besides Hulkbuster, I saw a really cool Galactus cosplay.
No,
really, really impressive. I saw Dr. Manhattan. That was really well done.
Complete with glowing blue dong.
He was wearing some boxer briefs. Had to keep it G-rated.
Good man.
Is he the guy with the painted eyelids?
Yeah, it was really cool because he had the white eyes,
yeah.
Right? And the shading like on his body had the appearance of like the muscles of Dr. Manhattan. Like,
yeah.
It was really well done.
Like he could see normally, like he didn't have contacts or anything on. He had his regular eyes. But whenever people stopped him for pictures, he would like close his eyes and
paint his eyelids white. Those white eyes.
That's amazing.
It was really well done.
That would be because they do have white out contacts,
mm-hmm.
but they are incredibly distressing to wear.
Yeah, I bet.
It really hurts your eyes to see through them, and they themselves staying in your eyes for that long hurts a lot as well.
No one wants that.
So, like, if you're doing like a short thing where you need to, you know, only put them in, like, if you're for example, if it's part of your costume for like a band or something like that, and you're only going to need to be on set for like 40 minutes, fine. But if you're going to like a day long,
you know,
con,
9 hours,
yeah. No.
No, thank you.
I want nothing to do with that. So that Hulkbuster costume, that must have been like a real pain in the neck for other people to try and like maneuver around.
For one, just moving it around, right? So if you're going to Comic-Con, you're going to need to bring that with you. So you would probably have to assemble it at Comic-Con.
Right, because you're not going to... There's no
pieces.
There's no door that you're going to be able to fit.
No, so just the amount of setup and having to walk on stilts and having to... be inside this. It's warm in there. You're probably getting hot.
I really
respect to that guy.
I really doubt that guy went through all that trouble and didn't install fans in there.
Yeah,
you're right. No, there probably had to have been some kind of cooling system inside.
Maybe even like a vest with like ice cubes and all that in them. Because
ice vests are a thing. Yeah, I used to do mascotting, that was the thing that I used to use all the time. Was an ice.
Either
vest.
Way, that guy was very impressive. I was super impressed by him. I just wore a Marvel shirt. I like taking photos with people in costume, but I'm not that dedicated.
And I feel like that's pretty much like the attire that I'm just going to go wearing.
I was still representing though, you know, wearing a Marvel tee. But
you're representing right now.
Yeah,
all hail MODOK.
I'm wearing a MODOK shirt that I got at Comic-Con. There was all kinds of cool characters there, but I had to get something that I thought no one else would wear, and MODOK came into my head. So I was like, okay, why not?
That's outstanding. Man, cosplay is such a wacky thing, you know? Like, if you just think about it, like, I'm gonna spend an inordinate amount of money and time putting this together.
There are people who are professional cosplayers.
Yeah.
Like, they have professional
They make money.
Photographers.
Mostly,
they get paid, I guess, to go to cons.
It's mostly ladies that do it.
Oh, yeah.
They set up, like, Patreons and dudes, like, donate, mm-hmm. you know, piles and piles and piles of money of them to see them in mostly skimpy outfits.
Yeah, there, I know there's
it's a fairly misogynistic industry. Yeah. I'm not a big fan.
Unfortunately,
of it,
there are a couple of guys who do it as well. But like, you're right. After a while, they kind of just like get to the skimpy outfits and all that.
Poison Ivy is a common one.
Yeah. So professional cosplay is just, but I mean, like, for the people that is not professional, right?
Mm-hmm.
That just like want to go.
They look forward to this. You know,
it's like. It's like their Christmas.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it's like the
Comic-Con,
3 days a year that they get to flaunt this.
It's always right around Halloween every year. It's in October. And that's something that you can always count on every year. There's always going to be some amazing costumes. It definitely is pretty impressive, the amount of money and time that people put into these kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. So you're listening to Beyond the Panel right now on UMFM. We're just going to take a quick short break to play... a legal ID and a quick ad, so we'll be back in a brief amount of time.
We don't give PhD looks here, man. Rolling the fat, laid-back tunes. CJUMFM, U of M.
Three of the greatest percussionists performing today come together to share the stage for one special night on Thursday, December 7th at the West End Cultural Center. Amadou Kouyaté traces his lineage back 150 generations and has spent a lifetime honing his craft on both the djembe and kutiro. Ghanaian Weedy Brema first played a beat before the age of two and has since studied with every African master drummer of note. And Juno Award-winning member of the African Guitar Summit, Nabi Kamara, is regarded as one of the best balafone players in the world. Advance tickets to see this terrific trio perform as the Masters of Rhythm are only $28 plus fees and can be purchased now at Music Trader, Into the Music, the West End, and online at Ticketfly.com. So get yours and mark your calendar to see Nabe Kamara, Weedy Brema, and Amadou Kouyaté on Thursday, December 7th at the West End Cultural Center, presented by Drum Victoria and UMFM 101.5.
Welcome back to Beyond the Panel on UMFM. I am your host, Brian. I'm joined by Curtis and Braden,
as always.
We're spending most of this issue talking about Comic-Con. Of course, we just finished talking about all the cool cosplays, costumes, people dressing up as certain stuff. We mostly talked about non-comic cosplays. Obviously, we saw two. Curtis said he saw two really cool ones, Dr. Manhattan and the Hulkbuster.
Yeah.
Did you see any other ones? Any other sweet comic cosplays?
I saw a really cool Iron Fist. I mean, that wouldn't be very expensive. You just wear a yellow mask. Paint the symbol on your chest. Wear some green.
You don't even need to go that far. There are plenty
of
issues.
But it looks good.
There are plenty of issues where he's literally just in a suit with a mask on top, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you wouldn't need to go that far.
But it was really cool. It looked really good. I like that quite a bit. I said to myself, why can't a Netflix series give us a costume? If it can look cool in real life, then I'm sure the show could do it too.
Well, not even just that, but if you think about like all the other costumes that Netflix or like Netflix series television shows have done recently, like as much as I don't like the show Arrow, his Stephen Amell's costume in that is really nice. The Flash's costume in the Flash show is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
The Daredevil costume in the Daredevil Netflix series is amazing.
Yeah, it's
so
fantastic.
Like, why the heck couldn't we get a cool costume for Iron Fist?
Maybe season two.
And I get spandex is kind of a no-no on like TV shows.
Yeah, fine. But put him in a leather jacket.
That's the thing. But it's like Daddy Rand's current outfit. It's not even like spandex anymore. He's wearing like a tracksuit that's like rolled up at like the legs.
Oh,
and the arms,
yeah,
and, like,
the current
down.
Iron
oh,
Fist.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, like have
yeah,
him okay. wear that in the show.
Yeah,
that's hilarious. So... what would you guys, what thing could have been at this Comic-Con that would have pushed it over the top? Something Ooh. That is, like, potentially reasonable. Like, obviously having, like, Scott Snyder is not a reasonable thing.
Getting a Scott Snyder panel at C4.
Or, like, Jeff Johns, you know, like, obviously. What small, tiny little thing, completely inconspicuous, could have pushed it over the top for you?
Braden, feel free to take that away.
Well, it's kind of a tiny thing, and it really doesn't have anything to do with programming, more along the lines of distribution of, like, of the booths and everything. Because how it's kind of set up at the moment is everything, like I was talking about where everything had its own space earlier, like the Artist Alley had its own space, all the shops and everything had their own space. But maybe mix that up a little bit, because when you have it all, like, cloistered together, like it all the shops kind of like merge to a customer, all the shops kind of like blend together after a while. But if you kind of distribute it more, like have some of like the jewelry booths and that kind of sprinkled throughout, or at least sprinkled throughout half of it, just so each person can get like a spotlight, so after a while your booth doesn't kind of merge in with the rest of those around you, where it's like you still stand out and you still get people coming up and asking to you. I just think like better distribution of like the booths and like and the guests and everything would just make it a lot more poppy.
So how many years have they been in like in this extended convention center? This is the second, right?
Second, yeah.
So maybe it's just like a learning curve, right? Like they're just trying to figure things out. I remember that near the end of the time at the with the old convention center, that they ended up having a really good mix of where everything was. And I do remember thoroughly enjoying like being able to like dart back and forth in between different shops and panels and artists and stuff like that. So, hopefully that's just a learning curve, and next year and the years after will be much better.
It's getting very big though, which is a good thing, because like this isn't called Winnipeg Comic Con, like this is Central Canada Comic Con. So, you know, people are coming over from
Saskatchewan,
you know,
Alberta,
other provinces,
Ontario,
even the states. Like I've been
it's,
in line.
It's a pretty
people.
Notable con for this area of North America.
It's one of the bigger cons I think in North America. Period.
Yeah. Fan Expo in Toronto would be like the big one for Canada.
Sask Expo is actually blowing up. Actually, like the Saskatchewan Comic Con, that's like really skyrocketing.
But this is a good one. So I guess like
maybe we might have a road trip in our future, boys.
You never know. I love going to cons. I guess like now that we are getting bigger, a way to elevate the cons even further and making them something even more special. For me, at least, and hopefully for a lot of other people, would be, I guess, bringing other people, more people involved in the comic industry. So it was really cool meeting, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Jason Fabok, Leonard Kirk. But maybe, you know, we're never going to get Jeff Johns or Scott Snyder, but even just maybe other artists, people can buy art from them, get sketches from them. I think that would be really cool.
Yo, right now, let's start a campaign to get Matt Fraction here.
Matt Fraction is pretty big. But he does
a lot of cons. He likes doing them, too.
What about that's how you know you love, you know, your job.
I'd love Matt Fraction to come. What about John Hickman? Jonathan Hickman.
Oh.
Don't tease me with that.
That's shooting for the stars.
Jonathan Hickman is, like, in my top three favorite writers ever.
That is shooting for the stars.
That would be unreal for me if he came.
That's a lofty goal.
I think someone like Jeff Lemire would be cool because he's both an artist and a writer.
And a Canadian.
And he's Canadian. So, I mean, that might be doable, maybe? I don't know, question mark. But that would be cool, though.
Because, like, most of the featured guests on that list weren't, like, they were, like, nerdy people and people that nerdy people are, like, into, but they weren't, like, hey, check out this awesome comic book artist or this awesome comic book writer, right?
So.
It's like, Baruchel's a really cool actor and a director. John Rhys Davies is a really cool actor.
Steve Bloom is a good voice actor, too, would be cool to bring.
They've had some really cool voice actors in the past. Most of the thing with most of the voice actors end up going to the anime convention, right? Because that's just where more people, like,
Icon?
I guess.
Yeah, they care about that more. That's
like,
true.
Yeah, like,
JYB frequents there. Johnny Yongbosch quite frequently is at anime conventions, and so is Greg Aries as well.
I think last C4, we actually had Sean Schemmel.
Voice
of Goku. I actually got his autograph.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I remember last year, and that was really pretty popular.
Really nice guy,
yeah.
That's amazing.
I recall that.
So, like, obviously, that's a really cool thing, too. Any other last thoughts about your closing arguments, last thoughts about C4 before we change topics?
I guess for myself, bring in some cool voice actors, maybe some other notable comic people. Keep on making C4 into a more popular thing that people can look forward to every year.
That's all I got. Yeah, and like I said, just a better distribution of some of the dealers and that, so everybody stands out and their product stands out.
Yeah.
But also really, really pump up the indie presence there. Like, I know there's already a huge indie presence. Like, you have so many artist aisles and artist alleys and everything.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not sure what else you can do, but it's just we have so much great talent, not just in this city, but in this province that shows up that it's a sin sometimes that these people go under the radar.
Yeah.
Do you think that they do enough, that C4 does enough, like, panels?
That's, you know what, that's a really good point, because I was going over the programming of that, and there was kind of a valley as far as panels. There was very, Chapter House did a lot of panels as far as, like, their art and their writing and their plans for 2018. But, and, yeah, a couple of other ones, like, how to be a successful indie, like, how to be a successful writer. But really very little panels other than that.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that's,
yeah,
having been to a whole bunch of, probably having been more to have been to more anime conventions than comic conventions, they have panel after panel after panel. You look and, like, there's four rooms that are constantly having panels all the time about different things. How to get into this certain anime, how to do voice acting, you know, looking into certain characters or certain, you know, like, arcs and stuff like that. You know, game shows, you know, like, make it a big party.
Yeah.
You know, like, I it's cool that you get to go there and meet all these people and everything like that, but, like, if you really want it to blow up, like, make it a big party. Have, like, panel after panel after panel. Get Steve Bloom to go in there and talk about what it takes to be a successful, you know, voice actor.
That's,
like,
awesome.
I think there needs to be more panels at Comic-Con. Give people who want
it.
Because, like, that's something that I really enjoy. I like going and listening and hearing from, like, the experts on certain topics. I like picking their brain. I like hearing quirky stories, stuff like that, you know? Like,
yeah. Agreed.
You know, like, going on YouTube and, like, watching like Comic-Con panels from, like, the Archer cast and stuff like that.
Oh,
like,
man. Imagine getting some of those guys.
That'd be, you know, like, so I would like to see more panels.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed. That's actually a really good one that I didn't say.
Right on. Moving on to our next topic. Of course, this Friday, Thor Ragnarok drops.
November 3rd.
With Hulk in there, Thor, of course, is in there, and the most important actor on the billing, Jeff Goldblum. So we're all going to try and go see it before next Tuesday.
Well, try. Not try. I've had my tickets for a month already. I always pre-order way in advance, so I will be there this Friday seeing it on premiere night.
I'm going to try and go next Tuesday during the day. I usually get Tuesdays off, so I'm going to try and go Tuesday before the show. Are you going to try and get to see it, Braden?
I work all weekend, and I got a busy Monday, but I'm definitely going to try and sneak it in one of those nights.
It's getting really good buzz.
Before the next show.
Perfect. Well, right good. On. So we'll all be in here next week having seen the movie and being able to talk about it. What are you excited for this movie?
I am very excited. I've heard such great things about this film. It seems like they really tried to kind of take the Thor franchise in a different direction, do a lot of interesting things with it. They're incorporating some of the Planet Hulk storyline in there, which I think is very interesting.
Does that not worry you just a touch? Because, like, the last movie that I went to that attempted to wedge too many storylines together was Batman vs. Superman.
True.
That bugged me because they weren't able to touch on the finer points of some of the stories.
That is true. The thing about this director, Taika Waititi, is he's an indie director. Like, he's not experienced with big blockbusters, but all of his movies, like, if you look them up, they've all gotten good reception. He has, like, this really quirky sense of humor, so he's bringing elements to this big Hollywood movie that I think, like, other directors just wouldn't do because they are so ingrained in, like, the Hollywood big blockbusters that they maybe don't have an eye for, like, some of the smaller details. So I do think he's going to do a good job balancing all the story elements. And from what I've heard is he definitely succeeded in that. I mean, haven't seen the movie, but going to go out on a limb and say I'm probably going to enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, I think it'll turn out well.
Right on.
Yeah. I was a bit mixed at the beginning when they were first announcing it. Like, Thor Ragnarok, I was like, okay. Like, when the title first came out, I'm like, all right, that's an interesting one. We're actually going to see, like, all the Ragnarok storylines throughout the comics kind of come to fruition here. And then when they released that updated logo, where it was all retro and everything, that kind of made me a little leery, because I'm like going, all right, are they trying to do with Guardians, are they trying to do with Thor what they did with Guardians of the Galaxy? And I'm not sure how that's going to work. But I was swayed over by the trailers and everything.
The trailer looks fantastic. It was. The visuals are insane.
I really try to not watch trailers because I got into a habit when I was much younger of watching a whole bunch of trailers and getting really, really, really excited for movies and then going watching the movies and having them not live up to
That's understandable. Mm-hmm.
But I watched the Thor Ragnarok trailer and
it looks so good.
I'm excited for this movie. I haven't enjoyed it. Either of the two previous Thor movies.
I thought the first one was really good.
The first one was
a good introduction to the character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just felt like it was one of the weaker of the MCU films.
I think a lot of people would agree, though. Like, Thor hasn't had as good movies as, like, say, Captain America or Iron Man. Mm-hmm. But I think this movie is really going to show us, like, Thor is a really cool character. And he has such an interesting lore and, like, mythology that you can use with him.
Exactly. Like, each Marvel character has had a definitive writer and a definitive run by that writer. The reason the Captain America movies have worked so well is because
those movies are good.
Yeah, like, his origin story, it's inspiring.
Classic.
It's a classic origin story. Winter Soldier, though, that comes from Ed Brubaker's run on Captain America, and that is the modern
essential Cap run.
Right.
There you go. That's the essential modern Cap run.
Oh, yeah.
I feel for Thor, his definitive writer and his definitive run is that of Walt Simonson.
Walt Simonson, and now modern day would be Jason Aaron.
Jason Aaron's
both of those guys have defined Thor.
I gotta admit, I'm not a huge Marvel fan at the moment, but I have a deep respect for what Jason Aaron.
Oh yeah,
Aaron
can't deny that. That's a really, really essential run.
Yeah, and like Walt Simonson's, his was where they both went wacky, but also really epic in story.
It was that whole cosmic thing, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Thor is not like a Shakespearean tragedy. Like, it has elements of that, but it can also be kind of cosmic and zany at times, even. Like, they had Beta Ray Bill in that and, like, Frog Thor.
Yeah.
I mean, because the fact that Thor is, like, a god and part of an actual god family, it allows them to...
You can do a lot with that.
You can break the metaphysics of reality because of that, right? Like, with superheroes, it's like, yeah, okay, like, they're a superhero, but, like, superheroes kind of play by their... They have to stick and play by a set of rules that have been developed by their powers, for the most part. And then most people complain if they get outside those powers. But the thing is, with, like, the wealth and depth of gods that come from that Nordic tree,
yeah,
and everything that involves with it,
yeah,
right?
The nine realms and everything.
Everything, yeah. Right? So like you can touch on so many different things and go in whatever different directions and basically meld the story in whichever way you feel like working it. Mm-hmm. And so it allows for such creative storytelling if done right.
Yeah, exactly.
And when it's done right, it's one of the Thor can be one of the best written comics out there, period, end of story.
And it's like a small point, but it's just like the color palette from Walt Simonson's run was so rich.
Yeah.
Like you had the rainbow bridge and everything. Everybody had such colorful costumes in that.
Yeah,
that it, because it was like mythological and it knew that it was fantasy, like you could take them seriously in that. And just the color palette for Dark World was just so gritty and gray and meh.
It actually really reminded me, or I guess other way around, is that Man of Steel with the movie, the Superman movie with Henry Cavill, really reminded me of that in that sort of way, that like you have a superhero with the most iconic color scheme ever and the most iconic identifiable costume of all time, and you take it and you turn it all brown and gray and gritty and just ugh. And it's depressing. And like that's the same way with Thor. Like the dude has an iconic awesome costume with a unique interesting color palette. Everybody else in his universe has a wicked sweet color palette too. Like Loki has a sweet color palette and costume.
Tom Hiddleston is great as Loki.
It's fun to look at. And so like when you take that and take that color scheme and that color palette and just rip it out of there, like it just drains so much of what makes that comic fun to read.
Yeah, and you see that with this movie. There's such a rich color palette to that, like so many greens, so many blues, so many reds, that it's just you're just reminded and you're going, all right, this is a wacky fun time.
The Hulk is so much more green in the trailers than he has looked in any of the Marvel movies.
And he has
up until
like
this point.
A limited speech, which we haven't really gotten from him before. Like it's all just been angry roars and whatnot. So I mean, I think that should be interesting, having more of maybe a slightly more intelligent Hulk in this film.
I really like the thought and idea of Hulk being an ancillary character through like a whole bunch of these movies.
Well, yeah, because Marvel Studios can't make a Hulk, like another solo Hulk movie, because of rights issues and whatnot, so they have to use him in either team-ups or like the Avengers films.
Yeah, right. And I think I've mentioned this before, that like my favorite Hulk run is Indestructible Hulk.
Yeah, by Mark Waid.
Correct. Which utilizes him in a number of team-ups with a number of different artists.
Hulk works contrasting him, I guess, with various other personalities.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah, it is.
It's fun to read. And so I'm insanely excited for, and especially how they introduced him based on the trailer. Like, it looks like it's going to be a really fun time.
It does.
I'm super excited about this.
I am too.
And in like a recent interview, Kevin Feige, when they were talking about Thor's presence, and they were talking about how Planet Hulk is such an important storyline in this movie, that he said this is kind of the start of like a three-part Hulk saga.
Oh.
Where it's like, I think it's going to, Hulk's whole storyline is going to almost appear in the backgrounds of other movies, but it's still going to be an important element in those movies. But like you were saying, they can't make dedicated movies.
Yeah, unfortunately, like although the Incredible Hulk is technically in the MCU and like Edward Norton played Hulk then,
he was really good as Hulk.
Yeah,
by the way.
He was good, and that movie like is canon and everything because like various events that happened in that movie have been referenced in passing.
Tony Stark appears at the end.
And Robert Downey Jr. is at the end of that movie. Unfortunately, after that, something with like Universal Pictures wouldn't allow Marvel to like make another Hulk movie.
Are we really sure that that's really unfortunate, though?
Hulk fans, it would be, I suppose. I'm not super sad.
Do you think a Planet Hulk storyline would work well enough on its own, like as a solo movie?
Well, it was in the comics, so I mean,
it probably would, but like I feel, so I'm a big believer in necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Yeah.
And so all of these wicked cool Hulk storylines in the background and all the weird, interesting writing quirks and tricks they're going to have to use to squeeze basically an entire Planet Hulk movie into the background of three other movies is either going to be really good or so bad that it's going to be good in retrospect.
Like in a so bad it's good way?
Yes.
I can't
believe that they're wedging 40 minutes of a Hulk movie into this Captain America movie kind of thing, you know? So, you know, I'm Yeah, obviously I would really enjoy there being a whole Planet Hulk movie, right? Like, yeah, that'd be really cool because Planet Hulk is a freaking cool storyline.
And then you know what that means? That means we get a World War Hulk movie.
Which would be cool, but at the same time, like, seeing him as part of, like, a team-up with all these different people telling the Planet Hulk storyline in the backgrounds of, like, three different movies, mm-hmm, that sounds like a really cool thing to me. I don't know about you guys, but that sounds like a cool storytelling mechanism.
I choose to place my trust in Marvel Studios. I seem to feel like they understand their characters and they want to be faithful to, mm-hmm, their characters.
Yeah, DC.
Yeah, cough, cough. Hopefully Justice League delivers. We'll see.
Oh, please, please be good.
That's only two weeks after Thor, by the way. That's please, November 17th.
We got Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is a really good movie. I have faith.
I liked Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it was. I have faith that they've learned their lesson. They're like, okay, we can't go too dark. We'll take everything that worked in Wonder Woman. It'll be here.
You just gotta, you gotta trust your characters.
The cyborg costume looks really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the trailers, the cyborg costume looks really, really nice. And
just seeing like the small bits of like acting and like lines that the actor has, I was like, this guy is a really good cyborg. I like him.
Yeah.
Where it's like he's not just a dumb jock that like that might appear, but it's like
there was one scene in the trailer that did not make me hopeful, though, where they're in the Batcave and Bruce Wayne is Bruce Wayne and not Batman, standing in front of Flash, not as the Flash, ask him to join up and be part of the Justice League, and the Flash says, yeah.
Oh, that's in Barry Allen's
And
house.
Bruce is surprised, yeah, I know the and one he asks him why, and then the Flash goes, because I don't have any friends.
Yeah. I was like, this is an interesting take on Barry Allen. I'll dig it.
That'll have to be an episode.
And you just see Batman's like desperation at the end where he's like, you know what, I'm taking you. I don't care if you're weird. You're in my team.
Please be good.
that shall be an episode on its own. I'm sure.
Yeah,
we'll have a Justice League episode.
Yeah, when that movie comes out, we'll talk about it.
No, yeah,
so,
for sure.
Anything else before we head to the wrap up?
Interesting. Like, I'm excited for Surtur of all things. Like,
that looks really cool.
Hela looks like a really awesome villain, but just that little clip of Surtur at the end with Hulk jumping at him, and you just see how tiny Hulk is compared to him.
Like, yes,
this is going to be an interesting fight where you have a being made of pure flame versus a being made of pure rage.
That, like, cannot be destroyed.
Yeah.
As long as there's, like, a single molecule of him being angry.
You're done, son.
Yeah. Anything else?
Other than, I guess, just I hope that people really like Thor as much as he should be liked, because I feel like not everyone has really seen, like, comic book Thor.
Mm-hmm.
We know Thor because we read, you know, comics and we like Thor comics.
If you want a really good one-shot, CM Punk's Thor Annual is really good. Light read. You don't need a lot. It's a super good read, and it's super light. It's like just an annual, right?
Yeah.
So you can pick it up, read it, get really excited about Thor before the movie, and then after that, you know, like,
I just want people to really, really be hyped about Thor as much as like comic book readers who have always known Thor is cool. You know, I want them to see Thor, I guess, in the same way, in the same light. It's basically what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and I think people have been really positive about the movie, so it shows that it's been turning out well.
It surprises me how many people I talk to that are just like, oh yeah, you know, like, I'm just kind of like into rom-coms and comedies. Oh, but the Marvel movies are really good too.
Yeah, a lot of the general audience watch these, like, so many people watch Marvel movies, and that's
not even like superhero fans. People are just like, you know, they like the movies because they are funny and identifiable and colorful and awesome. They're the best parts of comic books.
Yeah.
They are the best parts of comic books.
Yeah.
Which is like, people should be getting into the best parts of comic books all the time.
I hope that seeing the movies at least piques an interest in the comics. Hopefully it does maybe turn some people into checking out some Thor stuff, you know, like Walt Simonson you mentioned, Jason Aaron, CM Punk's one-shot. So we'll see, I guess. We'll see what Friday brings, but I'm excited.
I think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
All right, to the wrap-up. So last week's best-selling comics, Batman the Merciless, which we kind of knew. We talked about that last week.
That was a given.
So every single one of these ones has been the best-seller of its week.
Always.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. And there's another one coming out this coming week, so assume to see that on the best-seller list next week. Flash 33, Detective Comics 967. Come on, Ryan. Action Comics 990. Black Panther 166.
Art by Leonard Kirk.
That's surprising. It cracks the top five for me. Legacy. So we're finally getting to see some Legacy in here. Yeah. Saga 48. We talked about that last week as part of our independent. People really like that. It's surprising to see an independent comic in the bestsellers list.
Yeah.
So
people really like Saga.
One of the most well-known.
Amazing Spider-Man 790.
Ooh, we're getting close to that 800.
Nick Spencer.
Closer to that Nick Spencer run. We'll be there in less than a year.
Bless us, Nick Spencer.
Less than a year away. We'll see what he does.
Wonder Woman 33, Justice League of America 17, and Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps 31. Okay. Anything surprising on there to you guys? Anything that you want to talk about?
I guess, I mean, DC, there's a higher DC ratio than Marvel, but it's been like that for a long time now. That's unsurprising.
Unsurprising.
But it's cool to see Saga on there, you know, a non-Marvel DC that's in the top sellers. I'm glad it's there.
I can understand Batman the Merciless being the top seller. I bought it, like, Francis Manapul's art is top-notch in that book.
He's really good.
He's so good. He's able to, like, just convey scenes so well. Actually, the Merciless is probably, like, the least interesting for me of all these, like, dark Batman.
Interesting.
The modern story where it's, like...
Why isn't it as interesting?
Well, like, the modern story where it's, like, taking place in the now, where it has Argus, Shade, the military, Task Force X having to, like, try and come together and, like, solve this.
Right.
And they get beaten up and destroyed by the Merciless Batman. But, like, the background story where it's just, like, Ares killed Wonder Woman and Batman killed him and took his helmet. That's just not as that's not as compelling as like the Dawnbreaker Batman was for me.
That's fair. Okay, so new releases this week. Doc Savage, Ring of Fire. Dude. That's really exciting to me. I like Doc Savage stuff. It's a $16 book. It comes in trade paperback. It is how many pages is this?
Like 144.
167.
Oh wow, a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just a pulp-fueled espionage and intrigue setting.
That's awesome.
So I'm really excited about that. I love Doc Savage, so this would be really good.
That's cool.
Nightwing 32, Injustice 2, number 13, Batman the Devastator, which I'm sure we're going to see in the top-selling list next week.
Guaranteed.
Iceman, number 7.
Oh, okay.
Seeing him on his own as part of Marvel Legacy,
solo
this
Ice
should
Man.
Be really interesting.
All right.
Guardians of the Galaxy 146 as part of Legacy.
Yep.
This Guardians Galaxy has not really piqued my interest at all in any way, shape, or form, but I feel like people are going to pick it up because of the success in the movies.
Guardians is now a...
mainstream
is band. Now a good-selling book.
Cap, number 695 is part of Legacy.
Oh, that's the Wade Cap.
Yep.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
I was not a fan of Secret Empire at all, but you know what? I'm going to give this
it's Mark
shot.
Wade, so I'm
Mark Wade's
a
really good author.
Sure.
So, Avengers 673, Walking Dead number 173,
which is
what I've been into lately. I just started
reading.
Yeah,
they are into one. Like,
yeah,
in
I just started reading Walking Dead, so I'm not going to have a chance to pick this up new, obviously. I'm still like...
You'll get there in over 100 issues.
I'm only like three volumes in, but so far it's been insanely interesting.
Well,
the artwork is gorgeous. Charlie Adlard's artwork is beautiful. And Paper Girls number 17
Very
by Brian
book.
K. Vaughan.
Yeah.
If you like Stranger Things, which of course the second season
just dropped
on Netflix. If you like Stranger Things, you're going to love Paper Girls.
Paper Girls is for you.
Incredible.
You.
We got a couple of minutes. What have you guys been reading?
Well, I'm still reading the Batman main book right now. The War on Jokes and Riddles has wrapped up.
Yep.
The flashback arc has finished.
That's
and I got
over.
To say, it was a very well-written story. Not a whole lot of action. Like, it wasn't Batman beating up villains or solving a grand mystery. It's just all about this war breaking out that no matter how hard he tries, Batman can't contain it and stop the casualties. It's just rolling so
out. It was
out.
An interesting story.
It was. And so we're now into the, not sure if this is spoiler alert, but like it was revealed on the cover and everything. Batman and Catwoman are getting married.
Ooh!
Ooh!
Interesting.
Pretty
for
excited.
People who didn't know that.
Cortez, what are you reading, bro?
For myself, basically, I'll be checking out that new Wade Cap for sure. Mm-hmm. Love Wade. Also be reading the new Batman stuff. Other than that, for like new singles, I think that's all for me for tomorrow. I am now done my Hickman Avengers omnibus. Finally, after weeks.
Hey, now you can break into Justice League International.
Yes, yeah. And Justice League International will probably be next on the list, so I will keep you guys informed on how I'm digging it.
Wunderbar.
Awesome.
So thank you so much, guys. Of course, if you want to check us out on the Twitter, we're at BTP Comic UMFM. I know, stupidest Twitter name ever, but whatever, I'm living with it. I've made my choice.
We made our bed.
I made my bed, and now I'm lying in it. Yeah. If you want to email us, of course, we always like emails. BeyondThePanelUMFM@gmail.com. All three of us have access to that, so if you want to ask any single one of us a question, you can do that. Or if you want to ask a group one of us a question, suggest an episode, or even any comments, questions, or concerns, please
let us know.
Drop us a line.
Yeah, we'll love to hear.
We're going to be on next week with our Thor Ragnarok episode. Coming up next, Amy's going to be on with I Made You a Mixtape. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Panel. Thank you guys for joining me. It's been UMFM.
Catch you guys later.
See ya.
101.5.